Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball
with Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Now this week our next guest will be hopping on a plane to Japan, and we're very glad he's coming to studio ahead of what will be his third World Cup. Johnny Sexton, you're very welcome. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
I noticed you walk into the Aviva Stadium on Saturday with your big black headphones on. What are you listening to?
They were actually Cian Healy's headphones. I forgot my own, and he very kindly lent them to me. What was it? Literally just whatever was on, like put on Spotify and history and play shuffle. I'm not too fussy. I just like to listen to something on the way in. But sometimes I'd be, if I was really nervous, I'd be trying to meditate and stuff on the bus. But on Saturday, I was actually really excited about the game. Just having spent 3 or 4 weeks sat up watching them, and I felt like I probably could have played the week before. But was held back, so I was really just excited to get back out there and get going again.
And are they Cian Healy's spares, or was he saying, look, your need is greater than mine?
He's obviously the DJ, he's got 4 or 5 pairs hanging around, so now he threw them over and threw them on, yeah.
Okay, so you're not too fussy about what you're listening to, it's just a bit of music, a bit of distraction?
Yeah, it really is, and often I can go without them, you know what I mean? And but I just wanted to listen to something at that moment, but I'm not too fussy with that.
In general life, are you, you know, when you're going about your business, shops, in the car, whatever, are you listening to a lot of music? Are you a podcast man? Do you like your own thoughts?
I mix it up, yeah. At times when I'm on my own in the car, I listen to the odd podcast. You know, often health kind of stuff. With the kids now, my music, their taste has changed. Like the most adult thing I listen to is probably The Greatest Showman. When they're in the car, the mix of Mulan and all the different Disney classics over the years.
You've had a few months of Baby Shark, I presume.
That's been you know, on repeat a few times, but no, it's all good. It keeps them quiet in the back.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. I mean, anyone who looks at your Instagram account can see you're a very devoted parent and that your kids crack you up. You know, it's just the humour of being an adult, a dad comes across. I guess being the very best rugby player you can be and being the best parent you can be, they're not immediately compatible. What's that been like, getting a good balance?
Yeah, to be honest, it was something I really struggled with at the start. When I came home from Paris, we had Luca, I got back, and when I was training, I felt I was like, kind of felt I needed to be at home and helping out with him. And then when I was at home with him, I felt like I was taking shortcuts, I wasn't doing enough training, wasn't doing enough recovery. So it's something that I really struggled with. And then as I had more kids, that got a little bit worse again. So it was something I struggled with, and but I got a better, you know, holding it now. And I think planning my week better was probably one of the big things, and making sure that when I'm at home, I'm properly at home, not, you know, thinking about the game and thinking. And it's been really good for me. And once I got a hold of it, and it allows me to sort of get away from rugby, not think about it. And it can be harder the week of big games. That can be the big struggle. And being sort of there with the kids, but not there, you know, you're far away, thinking about what's in store.
Dad, what are you thinking about?
Yeah.
Don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess the nice flip side is Luca doesn't care if you've kicked all your penalties or missed them all.
He did say something to me after the Wales game last year. He just, obviously, he doesn't watch the games, he doesn't understand them, but he obviously listens a lot to what people say. And it would have come from someone in the family, because no one else had been around him. And he came, I was putting him to bed, and he just goes, Daddy, I heard you were 0 out of 10. And I said, oh God, that set my chain of thought off. I knew I was poor, but I didn't know I was 0 out of 10.
Who were the key suspects?
It was probably his uncle, so my wife's brother, or his granddad, my father-in-law.
Zero's harsh.
Yeah.
Will you go into coaching with a family? Is that, you know, because that's even a tougher gig, I would presume.
Yeah, it's something that I would love to stay in, you know, the game. You know, like I said, I'd love to play for as long as I can, as long as I'm wanted and needed, and I'd love to just keep playing as long as I can. But when that finishes, I love to stay in the game. You know, I love the game, I love being involved. But then there's the family considerations, you know. I can't see myself, you know, packing them all up and doing what Roger's done, for example. I can't see myself doing it now. I never say never, but
it's a huge stress on a family.
It is, yeah. But then you can have the other situation where you have, you know, what Leo's done, where he's, you know, stayed at Leinster as assistant and taken over as head coach, director of rugby, whatever his title, I'm not sure what his title is now. But, you know, those that's a dream, isn't it? Like, you know, getting to work with those young Leinster players. But we'll see what's in store. Hopefully a few more years left.
I'm sure. What would attract you about coaching? Is it the idea of being a Lancaster type on the pitch, working with players, and geez, if you move 2 yards this way, this could happen? Or is it being more of a Leo Cullen and overseeing the bigger picture?
I'm not sure. Like, I'd say if you ask 10 people, they might give you, you know, 5 might say you'd be good at that, 5 might say, so I'm not really sure myself. I'd like to think maybe, you know, on field, you know, I've worked with some great coaches, obviously Joe, Andy Farrell, Stewart, you know, even Cech and Knox, those guys like taught me so much. So I'd love to pass on some of that. In many ways, you know, when you're more experienced, like the young guys, you have to find the balance of trying to pass on some information, but they're your teammates at the end of the day. So, yeah, you know, you're not there to coach, you're there to, you know, help them and give them your experience if they ask for it. But it's sort of something that I, again, struggle to find the line, you know what I mean? Sometimes I'm very quiet and when they ask me, I'll open up really a lot or really quickly.
Yeah.
But I don't like to like push things on the younger guys.
Yeah.
I learned a lot by just watching guys like Felipe, Brian, you know, even guys that aren't in my position, Paul O'Connell, the way he prepared, the way he, you know, looked after himself, all those things. So I learned a lot by watching. So I hope that they learn from the senior players by doing the same.
Do as I do.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah.
It's interesting you say sometimes if you're nervous, you might do a bit of mindfulness or a bit of meditation or focus on your breathing just to try and settle things down. Like, there are such a range of states a player can be in before a game, from nervous to kind of fired up and I want to prove a point, and aggressive to talkative versus quiet, to thinking only about the game and nothing but the game versus I'm not thinking about the game at all, I'm just going to chill. Have you over the years found what's best for you, what tends to result in you having your best performances?
Yeah, that's something I've thought about in the past, and sometimes if you've done something, if you had a good game, for example, and you say, I was thinking about it all week, you know, maybe that's what I need to do, but you can't. I find that you can sort of tweak your mindset to say, well, if I'm not thinking about it all week, I'm more relaxed, I have more energy. Mm-hmm. If you are thinking about it all week, you're really focused. So you kind of use it in your favor. And I've kind of got to that stage now where, you know, every game is going to be different. And okay, it's about not stressing about how you're feeling for the game.
So you don't have a set, this is how I'm going to do it. And
no,
then you get upset if it doesn't work out that way that week.
Yeah, because you've had good games where you've been unbelievably relaxed. I've had good games where I've been unbelievably stressed and like my mind's been all over the shop and I've gone out and performed. So I know that even with my sleep, you know, sometimes, you know, you don't sleep 3 or 4 days before the game and you're like knackered and you still go out and play well. And other times you're sleeping like a baby and you play crap. But it's not to say next time you sleep great that you're going to play crap. It's just, it is what it is, and you got to just, you know, go with it. And I haven't always been like that. You know, you're often trying, when you have a good game, you try and replicate that the next time, and everything's different, you know, in each game. So
you could get lost in a mire of cause and effect, and why did I play well, and what happened?
Exactly.
You haven't found a pattern as such.
No, and it's frustrating because, you know, sometimes you prepare unbelievably well, and you go out, and you know, you train unbelievably well Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. You know, you don't miss a kick, you don't make a mistake. And it all unravels on a Saturday and you go. And then other weeks you can have a terrible prep, you can be injured, you can be sick, and you go out and you almost bluff it on a Saturday and things go well. So, it's a strange one. It's something that I haven't got a definite answer on.
Johnny Wilkinson did a brilliant interview in The Guardian today, and he was talking, I mean, the word depression was used towards the end of it, and he's talked about he's had a tough time, but he was talking about his career. I don't know, was this part of it something you could relate to? He was remembering when he was 32 years old at the 2011 World Cup, and he said, I was a shell of the player I had been when I was 20. I'd had 12 years to work and grow and build, and in all that time, all I'd managed to do was take the bright shining light of my potential and turn it into this dim, weak being. Because when I was younger, I was 50-50. Half of me was loving the game, half of me was worrying about what would happen if it all went wrong. And then as I got older, that ratio became 70-30, then 85-15, and it left so little space for joy. So the older he got, the more he thought of failure, 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 this could all go wrong. Where are you in that spectrum as you've got older?
That's a good question. It's hard because, you know, you do say enjoy it, but you, because of the experiences that you've had, you know that if things go wrong, you know, a lot of the blame will be pointed at you, and, you know, a lot of the team's expectations is based on on your experience, and a lot of the guys in the Irish team would be the same, and it is very hard to enjoy it at times, but it's the flipping your thinking, really. And for me, I've been very lucky to play in teams that have won things and experienced the other things, and the things that drive me are those moments where you get to celebrate with the team and you get to go and have, you know, 3 or 4 days celebrating, and so they're the things that motivate me, and that's the enjoyment. Okay. You know, there obviously isn't very much enjoyment in prep and being nervous and the expectation and the pressure and all that, and that's what he's obviously referring to. But I think what gets you through that is those moments where you do win afterwards.
Because he went on to say that I spent my career surviving the pressure I put on myself. You know, if you said to me when I was 20 that how did I do in my career, I survived it, I would have smacked myself. You know, that's not what it should be. But then you've never struck me as someone who went out and played his best stuff, like carefree, let's see what happens, who cares. You struck me as prepared and drilled and alert and focused. And that's you.
It is, yeah. And obviously, you know, when you hear someone like that, who's arguably one of the greatest players to have played the game, I would say, it gives you some kind of, you know, solid. You know, you sometimes look at, I would have looked at him as a kid and he's like bulletproof.
Yeah,
like
he is literally. Golden child.
Yeah, he is bulletproof. He's, you know, in his head, he's like 100% sure of himself. And, you know, when you hear those things, and that's one of the things about him being so honest, it teaches, you know, other young tens or kids or even people like me, you know, that, you know, your thoughts are going to get on top of you at times. And it's just about knowing that other people are thinking the same thing. And, you know, I don't think I've ever heard a sports person to not have doubts. Conor McGregor might be one. but, yeah, other than that, I think someone that I've admired and he had all those doubts, it's kind of reassuring for someone like me.
Yeah. Obviously, he had the pressure of kicking as well. Where are you now with your kicking? Do you feel good about it? Do you enjoy it? Is it something you relish doing?
I obviously take pride in being prepared in terms of doing, you know, a lot of practice. And where I struggle sometimes is when I don't get that real, you know, thing of practice. But like,
would that happen with like my quad sore? I can't kick 30 balls today. That kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And you can pick up knocks like unexpectedly. Like in Portugal, I was in a tackle and the tackle came down on the inside of my leg, and I ended up like the pressure and weight of that tackle kind of strained my groin, so I wasn't able to kick for about, you know, a couple of weeks. Yeah,
so I'd say you loved that, did you?
Yeah, exactly. And then you're thinking, you know, will I get the kick before the World Cup and all these things? And thankfully, it healed up really quick, and I could have played last week, but I only had a few days to prepare. But I think again, last Six Nations, I was probably struggling with a similar kind of injury, and I probably rushed things, and I made things worse by trying to practice, you know, Six Nations games.
Yeah.
A lot of
pressure.
You want to get out and practice, and you can make things worse. So you probably learn from those mistakes, and I took my time coming back last week, and then this week I was able to do a bit of practice before the game and felt much more comfortable.
Take your medicine. Got a success.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because it did look, you know, in the Six Nations, it's interesting you say that there's just a niggle there, and I know it's not you making excuses, it's just the reality. As opposed to 2018, when you get a good run and the body seems to be good.
I've said it before. It's the life of a sports person.
Sure.
You know what I mean? That's the biggest thing for us in terms of performance is your body. And with your body comes your mind. When you're injured, it's another stress and you're trying to get it right. And that's really it. It's not about, you know, making excuses.
The reality. Sometimes
yeah.
you get lucky, sometimes you don't. Has your technique, kicking-wise, changed much in the last 5-6 years? Are you at a point now where it's locked in, the work you've done with Dave Albert is there, and you're just honing a set way of going about your business, or have you experimented with different things?
We've experimented with different practice drills. I suppose working with Dave, when we started off together, he never came in and changed, like, this is how you're going to kick.
Okay.
Excuse me. He looked at me, obviously practicing, made some tweaks and said, maybe just try this a little bit or try this. And then the next time he came back, he said, oh, you've improved a lot from the last time you're here with this. Maybe now try to do, you know, something different with your foot and sort of drill it. But I was a little bit worried when I started working with him, because I'd heard that, you know, he was Johnny Wilkins' coach. He's going to just, like, break down my technique and get me to kick like him. But he's such a good coach that he never did anything like that. He just really went with what he got with me and sort of made some tweaks, and then eventually got to the stage where, you know, when he comes over now, it's really just doing a really good, focused practice session, not we wouldn't talk about technique that much, really.
What are the trigger words in your head as you're standing over it? If you're allowed to divulge that, I don't know.
Again, it can depend, really, after the practice. You know, there might be something in there where, as a kid, when they tell you to keep your head down, you know, it's probably sometimes the worst advice. And for years, when I kicked the ball, I'd finish with my head, like, down and over the ball. And that was drilled into me for years. And I got to be a decent kicker doing that. But then when he came in, you know, he wants you as tall as possible. But in there somewhere, there's that still that habit of what I used to do as a kid.
Yeah, it's hard to
shake something that I really need to focus on is staying big. So that would be, you know, one big thought just before.
Stay tall, stay big.
Stay tall, stay big. And that's where all your power comes from. And it's something that I still need to train, still need to sort of ingrain in myself to do, because it's not natural when you spend from the age of 6 or 7 to probably 22 when I met Dave, kicking a certain way. It's hard, very hard to break that.
Sure, yeah. We're here with Johnny Sexton, with thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. How did you play on Saturday in your own mind? Because I know everyone else thinks you played, and I'd love to almost get a sense of the checklist in your head when you assess how you played. Because I heard you talking to Adrian here a couple of months ago. I think it was about maybe the Saracens game or something. And you would think automatically you'd go to, well, passes or how you kicked the ball. And interestingly, you said, I got involved in a few too many rooks. You know, that was like your takeaway. So when you assess Saturday just gone against Wales, what jumps to mind? What's your checklist of stuff that you're like, that was good, that was okay, that was average, that was really good?
Actually, it's my game, like, you know, attack, defence, you know, you're kicking out of hand, off the ground. And then also how did the team play? Like, because number 10 is a big part of that. So
can't separate that.
Yeah, so, you know, there's some areas where, like, you make a mistake that you do in the first game of the year. I kick a 22 drop out on the full. Like, it's just like, I smiled because I did that for the first time ever last year and did it for the second time this year, or this season.
Straight away, Twitter, it's over, we're doomed, we're finished.
Really?
No.
Thankfully, I wasn't on Twitter during the match.
because, in fairness, you sort of smile, half smile as if to say, right, okay.
Yeah, but that's something that you do on the, you know, is again 1 meter away from being a perfect kick. Keith catches it up the wing,
and
so you know, it's just one of those things that you hopefully don't make it again. The other mistake would be the intercept, where I've never got a ball intercepted from a line out before, which might say something about why it was happened. But it was very clever by him, you know, when he didn't score, he said to the ref straight away, when I was asking him to check the offside, Dan said, oh, it was no try, sir. Because he knew that if he checked the try, he would go back and check the offside, and we'd have a penalty in front of the sticks. And it was unbelievably clever by him. And
right.
I was fuming. I was, the ref, I was like, he's tricking you, he's tricking. So I had a good laugh with Dan.
I didn't trick that at all. Yeah, right.
Well, I don't know if anyone would have tricked it, but just he's a clever player, and he knew that he was probably going to be offside. So I had a good laugh with him after the game about it. But there's a mistake that, you know, in a big game could cost you the game, but there's nothing you could have done about it. You know, I couldn't have given the ball any earlier or late. And when you pass to someone, you don't expect someone from the opposition backline to be in your backline. So did some good things. You know, I was happy with a lot of stuff. We defended well as a team. I was happy, you know, with the number of involvements in that. But good starting point, plenty to work on and build on for Scotland. And I'm just happy to get a base in there. There would have been a very stressed me going to the World Cup if I hadn't played any rugby.
Yes.
You know, it's good to have something to build on and to work off and to learn from.
This is an oversimplification, obviously, you'll appreciate, but one of the kind of talking points this year has been, born maybe out of the England game and the Aviva and the Six Nations, maybe a little bit regarding what Saracens have done, this like big physical rush defence, kind of pinning, say, Ireland in, if we're talking about Ireland, and if you don't win the collisions, things can get stagnant and squeezed. And is this in any way new, different to stuff you would have faced before? Is that like a big focus in terms of what you're working on now?
Yeah, we learned a lot from that England game. We didn't really put it into as good effect over that Six Nations. There was a lot of changes posted, but you probably didn't see the benefits of it, but hopefully now you'll see it at the World Cup in terms of, you know, when teams do put that line speed on me or the rest of the team, that we're able to deal with it a bit better and change the point of contact a bit more. And it's not often as simple as they're winning the collision. It's, you know, what we have to ask ourselves, why? You know, you guys, it's your job to say, we lost the collision, we lost the game. We have to go, okay, well, why did we lose them? How are we going to fix it? And thankfully, we've got some great coaches and experienced players that can all join together and come up with some answers. So we've learned to deal with it, I think, a little bit better, and hopefully you'll see that against Scotland and Japan.
This is your third World Cup. How do you feel about this one compared to the previous two? What are your main thoughts about it?
I'm looking forward to it. You know, I am looking forward to it. It's you wouldn't believe, you know, when you look, we're number one in the world, with all the criticism and all the doom and gloom around us over the last, you know, 6 months. You wouldn't have expected us to be in that position going over to the World Cup. But look, we'll take great solace in the fact that we've had consistency over 2018 mainly, but we've built a good strength and depth over last season with all the changes through the Six Nations and with guys getting chances. And I think we're just looking forward to it. You know what I mean? We know it's all gone on those first two games. You know, we got to get off to a good start, obviously, to get out of the group. And then we know that if we do get out of the group, that, you know, massive tests awaits us.
Yeah.
So it's.
Because you've had this incredible, incredible career. We'll talk about it some other time when you make sense of it all, and you're the reigning rugby world player of the year, and with Leinster, with Ireland, with the Lions, done some amazing, you know, been part of some brilliant days.
Yeah.
And yet the weird, horrible thought is you look back on your career in the two World Cups, and for two different reasons, one injury, one pesky run in O'Gara, you don't start either quarter final. And that's got to be it's unfinished business, the phrase, but that's got to be a thing that's there and been on your mind, I'm sure, in the past.
Yeah, of course. You know, both looking at those quarterfinals, both of them, you regret. You're thinking. I've said this before. Like, sometimes you can be delusional and you think, like, you know, you should be playing, and you always feel you can make a difference. And sat there watching the Wales game, watching the Argentina game, you feel, you know, I could have changed it. I could, but that's your self confidence. You know what I mean? And sometimes I've had thoughts, you know, where I was 21, sitting beside Felipe Contepomi, and I'm thinking, I'm better, I can play this, and I'm not, you know what I mean? This guy was world class, and I wasn't. And so sometimes your thoughts can be, you know, wrong. But, you know, sat there watching those quarterfinals, wished I was out there, you know, in both of them. But hopefully, you know, things will come around again, and I might get a chance to do it this time.
And it's small margins, because I heard you saying to Gavin Comiskey on the Sports Chronicle before, you know, that Australia game where Rog obviously is a competitor and he ain't letting go easy, and it's a good kick which hits the post, and then he takes the next one and they're more kickable, and suddenly momentum, and you find yourself out of the Wales game. Like, margins, moments, it's all so fine. I'd say that's one of the big things you've learned about sport, just how close success and failure are.
Yeah, it's massive, and that's probably the biggest example in my career, you know, that kick that I nailed one straight after half time, and there was internal pressure for that kick. Was
you'd heard Declan Kidney say, will we get him off?
Yeah, it was the highest probably pressure I'd felt in a kick, and nailed it, get another kick out on towards the sideline and take it on, and great kick, hits the post on the wind last sort of metre, and I thought it was over the whole way, and but that's, you know, that's sport, and Rog came on, kicked a couple of good kicks, and he retains his place for the for the Italian game, wasn't it, and then the quarters.
Yeah, it can be brutal. That rival.
What I learned, so much from that campaign.
Did you?
Yeah. I needed to be more focused on myself for that World Cup. I was always looking over my shoulder, looking rather than just thinking about myself, getting myself right, getting my own performance right. You know, I was half looking at him, saying how he was playing. And
it was hard because there was Rog cam every time you kicked.
Yeah, it was tough. It was, and again, what you learn from that. Myself and Dave got together after that World Cup, and I said it to him. I said, there was a couple of kicks where I'm lining up and behind the posts, Rog is there. And he said, next time that happens in a game, I said, I want you to have him as your target. And he just put the ball right between his eyes. And it was a great sort of visualization thing for me.
A bit surreal, though, that period with the rivalry. It was
crazy, yeah. Like, I hated, part of me hated playing for Ireland, because you feel like half the country are against you. And you're playing for Ireland, so you're doing something that you dreamt of since you were a kid. Mm. And you think that when you play for Ireland, you know, you're going to have the full support of the country and all that. But that's wishful thinking, you know what I mean? And they people weren't making it
pleasant. You know,
yeah. Easy. Well, no, they were. There was a lot of criticism. There was a lot of
scrutiny.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And obviously, because Roger was such a great servant to Irish rugby and so many games before me, so it made it difficult.
Sure. Yeah, because you'd come to associate it with, oh, geez, every time I go and play for Ireland, there's the comparisons. Whereas with Leinster, I can just play my game.
Yeah.
Are you so that rivalry? And I have not brought you in here to talk about the Roger rivalry. Has that informed how, you know, Joey Carberry is coming for you? Like, that's the brutality of a professional sport. He wants your jersey. I'm sure you get on fine. Have you said to yourself, well, I don't want this rivalry with Carberry to go from healthy and us driving each other on in a good way to unhealthy, whereby we're thinking too much about each other and what's he doing and how's he looking and that kind of stuff? Or how have you treated being in the Rog position now with younger guys coming through?
That's what I've got to learn from it. You know, like, you always have, like, I wouldn't change anything all over my career. You even talk about those lows. Like, they helped me do things that, you know, I achieved in later years, you know what I mean? So as much as you'd love to go and change them, they're part of you. And what I have to take now is really focusing on myself. And like, obviously, if Joey, you know, keeps improving, and, you know, and if Joe or Andy Farrell, my next coach, goes, look, we're going with Joey, like, you know, if I've given my all and I've, you know, focused on myself and made sure I keep trying to improve and he takes the number 10 jersey, well then, you know, I can live with myself, you know what I mean?
But
if I get all hell-bent on looking at him every step of the way and wondering, like, you know, he will take it sooner rather than later.
It'll affect your form.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. So
the kind of thing where you would have said to him at any stage, listen, obviously, look, no hard feelings, mate, we're both going to go gung-ho here, let's keep it friendly. Does that need to be said out loud, or is
I get on really well with Joey. Like, we were teammates, you know, got to remember, with Leinster, you know, not so long ago, and playing in the same team, and we're, it was Stuart's sort of idea of having two guys that can play either side of the ball, either side of rooks, and make our attack even better. And like, you know, I would have, you know, talked to him a lot around, you know, different things that, you know, I wanted him from him, and, you know, how can I get you into the game more, and make sure if you're a first receiver, just boss it, and I'll just slip out one, you know what I mean?
Yes. Okay.
So we were great, and I gave him, like, he was bouncing stuff off me when he was deciding when he was going to stay or go. And
he's like, go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, give me a couple more years and answer. Yeah. I just said to him, look, you make whatever decision you make, you'll make it right, you know, post the decision, you know what I mean? So I wouldn't just go with what you think. And it was like me going to Racing, you know. Once you make the decision, you make it the right decision how you go after it.
Yeah.
But like, he had that big decision to make, but we got on well, and a lot of it was made about that Munster game, and like, so many other things happened in Munster Leinster games, and it was just the fact that it was me and him, and I was texting him after the game, just saying, look, it's blown up on my phone anyway, you know, that it's nothing
personal.
He said, of course, you don't even need to text.
I guess it's good you had that formation of, like, being teammates and friends, I suppose, whereas with you and Rod, you're standing over in Crow Park, and it's maybe not the best.
Well, that's not the first step.
I know, yeah. A few others get into another time. So to round this up, you go on Wednesday.
Yeah.
I guess, especially with kids, is a part of you thinking, oh, this is a long stint now, and time away from family, and boredom will set in? Like, will you be watching Netflix or reading, or will it just be good times all the way? Do you enjoy being in camp? Because you've done it so often now, I guess.
Yeah, a bit of everything, really. It's nice to be able to look forward to the World Cup. Finally, you know, all the way through the summer, you're just stressing about injury, you're stressing about, you know, the warm-up games. Even, I was so impressed by how we played on Saturday, because, like, it's a very hard game to play, that last warm-up game. You know that guys have gone down in previous years, and you have to try and find the balance between, you know, playing for Ireland, you know, you're still playing in international, but you've got it in the back of your mind, and I thought we turned up brilliantly and showed what it meant to us to play for Ireland, despite all that distraction hanging over our head. So it's nice to be able to look forward to it and say, I'm flying out on Wednesday.
And feel good.
And look forward to it. A mixture of that sort of excitement and dreading being away from family. You know, I think they're going to come out if we get past that quarterfinal stage, and they'll come out if you win a quarterfinal, you're there for another 2 weeks.
You're there till the very end.
We're going to leave it till then. So
fingers crossed.
Yeah, please God, things will go well, and we get a little bit of luck along the way with injuries, and with, you know, you're going to need a little bit of luck to do it. We didn't get much at the last World Cup, so hopefully we'll have saved up a little bit.
Fingers crossed. Listen, thanks so much for coming in. Really great chat, and go well. I guess the whole country's hoping you guys
thank you very much.
Thanks,
yeah,
a million.
We'll do our best.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball
with Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.